नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
बहूनां जन्मनामन्ते ज्ञानवान् मां प्रपद्यते वासुदेवः सर्वमिति समहात्मा तु दुर्लभः। After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is, as a great soul is very rare. So this is the conclusive word in the series of Chaturvidha Apadantema. So here the Lord says, Bahunam Janmanamante, after many, many births and deaths, one who is in actual knowledge surrenders unto me. So what does one do in all these different births? In the beginning, one tries to derive satisfaction in some material pleasures. He is called as a bhogi. So from bhogi one becomes a tyagi, and from tyagi one becomes a bhakta later on. So one tries to derive enjoyment through the material pleasures of the world, and one doesn't show any interest in God at all. Generally, people, as long as life is going smoothly, people think, why should you go to God? Why should you worry about God? But over a period of time, as one progresses after many, many lifetimes of suffering, birth and death, one may come to some sense to understand that these worldly things cannot give me pleasure. I have to do something to go higher. I have to gain some daivi sampad, some spiritual assets. There is a story of desolate island. You heard of the story? So the desolate island story says that a man once was traveling in a ship. He had a lot of gold coins and he was a rich merchant. And when he was traveling in the ship, there was a heavy storm and his ship was wrecked and he was alone, practically stranded. And there was an island. Fortunately, he landed in an island. And when he entered the island, a lot of people came and picked him and kept him in a palanquin, and they took him into the island, and he was very afraid, what are they going to do with me? But then they garlanded him, they crowned him, and they said, they are going to make you the king of this island. And he was very happy. And after having been made the king, he was given so many facilities. He was given so much wealth, so many women and servants to serve him, and so many luxuries and facilities. And he had a minister. And he called the minister and asked him, what about the previous kings? The minister said, here nobody survives as a king beyond 1 year. I have seen the previous kings also. Only 1 year you can be a king here. And what happens to him next? Then the minister said, after finishing your 1 year period here, you'll be sent to the Andaman Nicobar Islands. Really? What happens to me there? Then he said, when you go there, it is completely like a deserted land. And many kings in the past enjoyed this 1 year period as much as they wanted. And then after that they were put for sentence, for lifelong sentence there. And they can never come back. That means they don't have any facilities there. Then the minister said, what about facilities? And they are starved to death there. There is nothing to eat, nothing to drink. Their hands and legs are chained there and they have to die pitiably. The minister said, what to do? I have been seeing this city for several years, seeing this plight. So many people have become king and they have been thrown there and they have died. Oh, is that the case? Then the king became very intelligent. Then he ordered the minister, as soon as he became the king on the first day, right from that day, the king really restrained himself from all the luxuries that were offered to him. Rather, he started working very hard and sending facilities to that island. So he would send, tell the minister, take this, take that, and construct a big palace there, send the servants there, plant trees there, make gardens and everything, make roads, everything. That's the end. So 1 year passed. At the end of the first year, what happened? Then his spirit came to an end. Then he was put in a boat and taken to that island. But when he reached that island, all the servants were awaiting him. They greeted him nicely and they made him the king of that island. And he happily lived ever after. So this story is from Western novels. But this is quoted by many of our female Kant devotees. How is it relevant to our life? It has a great relevance to our lives. You see, this king, he was very intelligent. He knew that I have only 1 year period before which I can create good facility in that island. And if I enjoy now, when I finish my 1 year period, what will happen to me? I'll have to suffer for eternity there. But if I restrain myself a little bit now for this 1 year, then I can go to that island, I can be happy forever. In the same way, one understands that I have to go to eternal life. This kind of flickering pleasures, it will not last forever. The intelligent person understands. So he doesn't want to do bhoga here. He doesn't want to be a bhogi. Because a bhogi, his happiness is very short-lived. How long can a person be happy? Even in throughout one's life, one cannot be happy also. So probably the youthful age is considered an age of pleasure. Maybe between 20 to 40 or 20 to 50. One may enjoy some pleasures of the world. And then come huge responsibilities on the head. One has to do so many things in this world to fulfill one's obligations. There is hardly any pleasure in this world. One has to run around here and there to fulfill one's duties. So even in one life, there is not much happiness. What to speak of a person who has whiled away all his valuable time when he has achieved a human form of life? He is a fool. So a bhogi is certainly a fool. But higher than a bhogi is one who is a jnani, who is a tyagi, who understands that life is not meant for enjoyment. In fact, I am repeatedly being frustrated. That's a nice prayer by one acharya. Very nice prayer. He is saying, this lust is such a great enemy that I have been scolded by hundreds of people for my misbehavior. And I have been taught by my spiritual master about the danger of lust and about how one should refrain from lust. And I have been rebuked by government men and beaten up so many times. And I have been punished also. And I have read the Shastric statements, thousands of statements in Shastra, about how lust is an eternal enemy of the soul. But even after hearing all these things, my desire for enjoyment has not ended. So he is praying actually to Vrindavan Dham. This is a prayer coming in Vrindavan Dham Mahima, that's a book. That the author is saying, oh Vrindavan Dham, I am taking shelter of you so that you will free me from this lusty propensity. He's saying like that. In the same way, one who enjoys both in this world, ultimately he only has to be frustrated. He can never be happy. Because lust inevitably leads the person to the point of frustration. That is the very nature of lust. See, lust has two haunts, two sides. If you don't satisfy it will increase your hankering. When you satisfy it, it will lead you to frustration. So you can't go either side. It's like an ant that is caught between two fires, you know. So there's a log of wood and there is fire on either side of the wood. It can never be satisfied. So a person understands that I cannot be satisfied in this world. This is a temporary world. I cannot be happy. But then there are karmakandis who are planning for a higher world, which is Swargaloka. But that is not also a very great thing. Because if you give 1 rupee to a brahmana, the shastras have so many injunctions regarding this. They say, don't try to hold on the money. Give the money to a brahmana. Because if you give 1 rupee to a brahmana, it will come back as 1,000 rupees to you. If you give water during summer season, next lifetime you will have a big well by the backside of your house. Like that. Always give in charity to people. They may give in charity, they may chant Vedic mantra, and they may promote it to heavenly planets. But what is the use? Again, they are coming back to the Marthalota again. So that is not a very great renunciation, tyag. Because they are giving up one sense gratification for the sake of getting a little higher sense gratification. So that is also not a very high platform. Then we have the tyagis or the jnanis. They want to renounce everything of this world. But they feel that all the pleasures of this world are flickering and they cannot give lasting satisfaction. Let me completely give them up. But what kind of renunciation is it? Like if they come to your house and they say, I renounce this TV, I renounce this umbrella, I renounce this car, what kind of renunciation is that? So when I come to your house, nothing belongs to me there. Similarly, this world also is a house of God, is created by God. So we have, in reality, nothing to renounce in this world. We only have to recognize that everything belongs to Krishna. We have nothing to renounce in this world. Even if someone says, I am renouncing, it is only, he is cheating himself. We cannot renounce anything in this world. But one can recognize that nothing belongs to me, everything belongs to Krishna. That is the proper understanding. So the jagis, they want to get out of this world. So after many, many lifetimes, the jnanis come to a point where they want to renounce everything of the world and they want to go back to the Brahman. So they want to go beyond this material world. And in order to do that, they struggle a lot. They take a lot of pains in order to do that. As you must have seen, there are people who torture their bodies by piercing with a spear, by walking on the red hot pole. In fact, the austerities are prescribed in the scriptures. If one wants to go beyond reality of sukha and dukkha, happiness and distress, then the austerities mentioned in scriptures are very terrible. Like they put fire around them during summer. So the jnanis undergo a lot of pain and try their level best to achieve the Brahman, the impersonal Brahman. But it is said in scriptures, patanti ado anadrita ishmadandaya. Even after achieving the Brahman, they again fall back to the material world. Again. Because that is not a permanent shelter. Just like a rocket goes in the sky, not having found any planet to reside, it falls back to the earth. Like the skylark fell down. Like that they also fall back. That's why Krishna says, Bahunam Janmanamante. They take many, many lifetimes. It's a very long path, he says. One has to go through this bhoga, and then karmakanda, and then jnanamal, ashtangamal. It's a very long path. There's a story, interesting story of Bhaktivinoda Saraswati. He says how once a man wanted to reach his father-in-law's house. He was a blind man, and he didn't know how to reach his father-in-law's house. Of course, he arrived at the frontiers of the village, but he didn't know how to enter the village and how to approach the house. So he asked somebody for the certain direction, and they told him that you catch hold of the tail of this cow, because the cow belongs to your father-in-law. So it will reach you there. So he caught hold of the tail of the cow, very firmly, hoping that it will reach the destination. And then the cow started dragging him for some distance. And then the cow found somebody is holding on to my tail very firmly, became very upright. He started jumping and running from there. So because the cow started running fastly, he was going through the jungle, he was going through the thorny bushes, was dragging him all over the sharp pebbles of the forest. His body got torn in many places, his clothes got torn. And besides that, he was getting the repeated kicks of the hind legs of the cow on the backside. In this way, practically when he reached the house of his father-in-law, his body was totally stripped naked. And then, when the people in the house, they found that there was a big noise, they came out and saw, and they found somebody holding on to the tail of the cow, and they didn't know who it was. They brought a stick and thought that it's a cattle thief, started beating him and pounding him, like that. At last, they identified who is this personality. He happened to be the son-in-law. So in this way, he reached the house of his father-in-law with the hard way. The same that Krishna says, Klesho vadikatarastesham avyakta asatta chetasam avyakta hi gatir dukkham dehavadviravaptate. He says, Klesho adikatarastesham. Klesha means kashta, suffering. Klesho adikatarastesham. If one tries to artificially imagine that the absolute truth is impersonal, it has no form, no qualities, no attributes, which is not a reality. If one assumes like that and then tries to meditate on the impersonal Brahman, it's called as Klesho Adhikatarastesham. It is simply increasing the suffering on the path of self-realization. Avyakta Asakta Chetasam, he says. Avyakta means impersonal Brahman. Asakta means attachment. Avyakta Asakta Chetasam. Once his consciousness is attached to the impersonal Brahman, his body is the part of this man who had to have a tough way, who had to have a tough way to reach the house of the Father in love. Whereas the devotee is not blind. This man was blind actually because he was trying to follow the path of speculation. Whereas the devotee follows the path of the previous acharyas. So his path is very well laid. That's a royal road, and somebody comes back to take him by his own finger and takes him to the house of abode of Krishna. So we have nothing to worry. Just like a child is catching the finger of the father, so the child has to catch up with the father's finger and he will take him back from back to Godhead. Like that. So a yogi may renounce the pleasures of the world, apparently, and try to focus on the absolute truth, but he is not able to achieve the ultimate success because he doesn't follow proper authority. For devotees, Bahajana Yena Kata Sapanta, we have a proper authority to follow. So there is nothing to lament for devotees. Whereas for those who are non-devotees or those who are impersonalists, they have to struggle hard to reach the ultimate destination. Because they are trying to concoct ways and means to achieve the supreme absolute truth. Bahunam Janmanamati. So they take a long time. Bahuna. Many, many birth centers they have to undergo. At last, Jnanavanma Sapatyate. They ultimately come and surrender to me. So if you know that you have to surrender to Krishna anyway, why not surrender now? Why speculate? Anyway, you know that ultimately Vasudeva Sarvamiti, everything is Lord Vasudeva, everything is Krishna. That is the ultimate truth. Vasudeva Sarvamiti, this is elaborated in Bhagavatam. Vasudeva Para Veda, Vasudeva Para Makaha, Vasudeva Para Yoga, Vasudeva Para Kriya, Vasudeva Param Jnanam, Vasudeva Param Tapaha, Vasudeva Paro Dharma, Vasudeva Paragati, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. There is the meaning of Vasudeva Sarvamiti. God Vasudeva is everything. Vasudeva Paraveda. After reading all the Vedas, once you come to the conclusion of realizing that Lord Vasudeva is the goal of the Vedas. Vasudeva Paramakha. When you do Makha or Yajna, the Yajna Purush is who? Lord Vasudeva. He is actually the object of Yajna, Yajna Purush. Vasudeva Parayoga. You may do gymnastics, asanas, pranayama, pratyahara, everything. The ultimate goal of that asana, everything is Ashtanga Yoga is realizing Vishnu in the heart. Again Vasudeva Parayoga. Vasudeva Parakriya, even the karma can't be performed. Although it is offered to the demigods, ultimately it is offered to Lord Vasudeva only. In the next chapter, Arjuna will ask the question to Krishna. Kim tad brahma kimat yatvam kim karma purushottama. He is asking, who is Adiyajna? Who is Adiyajna? Adiyajna means, who is the Lord of sacrifice? Is it Indra or is it you, Vishnu? So Krishna clearly clarifies that point. The Lord of sacrifice is Vishnu. Although Indra is an immediate person who accepts the fruit of sacrifice, but the ultimate person who accepts the fruit of all sacrifices is Vishnu. Same is true for any demigod, not only Indra. So in this way, Vasudeva Parakriya. Vasudeva Param Jnanam. If one claims to have become a great scholar, scholastic attitude should culminate in surrendering to Lord Vasudeva. Otherwise, he is no good scholar. In fact, it is said that when a great scholar, greatly learned scholar, becomes more and more advanced in his knowledge, at one point of time, he turns into a devotee, it is said. Because one becomes captivated by the glories of the Lord. Even Sukadeva Goswami was a very great scholar, very great jnani, he turned into a devotee. And not only that, such a great scholar's pride or greatness is smashed when he takes shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. At once he starts feeling humble. Whatever pride he had, which was in the form of a big mountain, that becomes smashed into powder when he becomes Krishna's devotee. That's why he said Vasudeva Param Jnanam. Ideally speaking, a scholar is never supposed to be proud. Just like a tree which possesses fruits, because of heavily loaded fruits, it is always bowing down. It doesn't stand erect. Similarly, a scholar, the more one becomes learned, the more one is supposed to become humble. But you see the opposite in the case of impersonalists. Many people become more and more proud. The more they become learned, they want to become big Vijay Pandit. They are proud of being very scholarly. But when one turns into a devotee, at once one becomes humble. Vasudeva Param Jnanam. Vasudeva Param Tapaha. And the culmination of all of our penances and austerities is Lord Vasudeva. And then in this way, all are directed towards Lord Vasudeva. Vasudeva Paro Dharma. The ultimate dharma, there are many dharmas. There is one dharma which tells you that you should serve your father and mother. Another dharma tells you you should serve your nation. Another dharma tells you you have to serve the demigods. Another dharma teaches you that you have to selflessly serve the society and other living beings in the world. But the ultimate dharma is Vasudeva Paro Dharma. Sarva dharmān parityajya māṁ ekam śaraṇam vraja. That is ultimate dharma. By Lord Krishna says, give up all the lower dharmas and surrender to me completely. That is ultimate dharma. Vasudeva parād gati. What is gati? The ultimate destination. That is also Lord Vasudeva only. So this is ultimate realization. Vasudeva sarvamiti. Everything is Lord Vasudeva. So mahātmā sudurlabha. Such a great soul is very, very rare. Durlabha means rare. Sudurlabha means very rare. One who comes to this point of conclusion. That's why in Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayanaha sudurlabha prashantatma kotishvati mahamune. Same word is used there, sudurlabha. Very, very rare. Rare are those souls amongst muktanam api siddhanam. Amongst the liberated souls and the Siddha Purushas who have achieved some perfection, some siddhis, no? Ashta siddhis. Amongst crores of them, Kotishvati Mahamune, amongst the crores of liberated souls and siddhas, there is one Narayana Parayana. What is Narayana Parayana? TV Parayana means one who is always seeing TV. So Narayana Parayana means one who is constantly worshipping Lord Narayana. Like that. You understand the meaning of Parayana? TV is a good example. Like anybody can understand. Kaliyuga we have so many TV Parayanas. Even Kutumba Parayana. Kutumba Parayana also is used in the scriptures. Kutumba Parayana is a person who works morning to night, day and night he is working for only his family. Kutumba Parayana. He is thinking of how to serve his wife, children, father, mother, mama, mommy, dada, dadi, nana, nani, everyone. All possible relatives and friends, he is caught up in a mess. And he has no time for that. Because it's Kutumba Parayana. Narayana Parayana is one who is simply sold out slave, sold out servant of Lord Narayana. His body, his mind and words are all used for Narayana service. Such a pure devotee of Lord Krishna is Kotishvati Mahamune. Now one out of crore people. And who are these crore people? Muktanam and Siddhana. They are not ordinary people. They are liberated souls and Siddha Purushas. Just imagine how rare it is. That is why it is called Sudurlabha Prashantatma. So they are very, very rare. Then he can be called as Mahatma. Mahatma is not an ordinary term, at least according to scriptures. Mahatma is not a rubber stamp that some people give you. So some people belonging to a country, like in our country we have made somebody as a father of the nation. Krishna says, Pita Aham. I am the Pita, he is saying. Pita Aham is Siddhartho, Mata, Dasa, Pitamaha. I am your father, I am Papitamaha, I am Pitamaha. I am the grandsire, I am the father, I am mother, I am your bandhu, I am everything Krishna is saying. And we can make somebody as uncle of a nation, as father of a nation, or, you know, mother of a nation. We can make all these things. And we may even give rubber stamp to somebody. But that rubber stamp doesn't make a person a Mahatma. Of course, one has to get Krishna's rubber stamp. Krishna seal as Mahatma. What is the qualification for that? Mahatmana Tumam Partha, Daivyam Prakriti Mahashyata. One who is a completely surrendered devotee of the Lord is called as Mahatma according to scriptures. Otherwise one is a Duratma. That's not a Mahatma. If one is doing even best of the welfare activities, social welfare activities, building hospitals, building schools, he's a nice person, but he's not a Mahatma. We agree with you that he's a good person. He's a good person, kind person, but not a Mahatma. Who is a Mahatma? Mahatma has to be a devotee of Krishna. So when we speak like this, sometimes people become shocked. They see, what is this? What difference it makes? A person is doing good activities to society, building hospitals and building schools and doing nice things. Why can't he be compared to a devotee of Krishna who is constantly thinking of God? Such a person who is doing all the social welfare activities is actually not rendering service to society in the true sense of the term. Because all the living beings are suffering in this world because of turning their face away from Krishna. So they are turning their face away from Krishna due to which they are getting diseases, they are getting old age, they are suffering death. And we are coming in between and telling them, we will cure your disease, don't worry. And they continue to forget Krishna. We'll build a hospital for you and we'll cure your diseases so that you can continue to forget Krishna. Don't remember Krishna. So, even if you want to do good to people, you should actually know what is good. Only then you can administer good to people. For example, one of you assembled here today has a boil in your hands. Big boil, and you are suffering severe pain, excruciating pain. And I want to help you, but I am not a surgeon. I am an ordinary man in society. Can I help you out? Can I do good to you? How can I do ever good to you? I tell you, please kindly come to the bathroom, I will cut off that boil. I bring a knife from the kitchen. You will come there? He said, "Devil, no, don't worry, I will just cut off the boil. I want to help you quickly. You will never put any pain. You will know that this will kill me by cutting off my boil. Because you have to be a doctor. You should know after cutting the boil how to dress it, how to avoid the germs coming in, and so many things you need to know in order to do that. So even to administer good, one should know what is good, first of all. Similarly, the Shastra says, there is a nice verse, Labante Brahma Nirvanam Vishayakshina Kalmasaha Chinnadvaitaya Tatmanaha Sarvabhuta Hite Rataha. I think it's in first chapter there. Fourth or fifth? First chapter there. Labante Brahma Nirvanam Vishayakshina Kalmasaha. This is the qualification of a person to do good. Kshina Kalmasaha means one who is free from all sinful activities. He's completely, he's a sinless person. Sinless person. Kshina Kalmasaha. Chinnadvaita. He has already gone beyond the dualities of this world. He doesn't care for manapaman. He doesn't care for sukha-dukha. He is a pure personality. Only he can know what is good. And he is called as the sarva-bhuta hiterata. He knows the what is the best welfare for every living being. He can only do good. And such a person actually is a devotee of God. He is not just a person who serves the court. Like a drowning man, you serve the court instead of saving the drowning man. He doesn't save the court, he saves the person. So, for one to be actual Mahatma, one has to be a devotee of God. And such a devotee of God is such a valuable asset in the whole creation. Because he can give the lasting satisfaction to the living entity. What can a devotee do to you? Anybody can say? Let me have different answers from different people. What can a pure devotee do to you? Let me get different answers from different people, yeah? Not only regarding the bile. But I am now, surgeon example is over now. what do you expect a pure devotee to do to you? Yeah. He can give Krishna, very good, yeah?
Guidance
to Krishna, very good.
Permanent cure.
Permanent cure, very good answer. The devotee, pure devotee can give you a permanent cure from this material world. No more sufferings. Now we are talking about the example of surgeon, one boy. You behave under the boy and we are in this world. Cycle of birth and death, he is repeating again and again and again. So pure devotee can help you to get out of this world and go back to Krishna. Anybody else has any other answer?
They can take us from
the material existence. Yeah. You can leave from the material existence. Anybody else? He is saying that the pure devotee helps you to realize what is your constitutional position with respect to Krishna. Good point, yeah. Yes, good point. A pure devotee will help you to identify yourself. What is the actual problem? Why am I suffering? Where is the pinprick? Where is all the suffering beginning? Once you become a devotee, you realize this point. My Lord, here lies the real problem. I am trying to become the Lord and Master. I am trying to become enjoyer. You just trigger that one point, your life becomes peaceful. At one point, you understand. So this is the duty of a devotee. If a devotee helps you, talking to your problem yourself, that I am trying to bar over this world. Once that enjoyership mentality is given up, proprietorship mentality is given up, then life becomes so easy. Life is a cakewalk. There is no problem in this world. Problems are all imagined by us. But why do we imagine problem? Because of this proprietorship and enjoyership, these two things. So pure devotee helps us to identify the problem. Good point. So pure devotee's words are so enlightening. It's like a lightning. It's like a lightning. In the black sky. The whole world is like a dark cloud. But the devotee is watching like a lightning. It really enlightens us and helps us to come to our senses. And again, as somebody said, regain our conscious position and surrender to Krishna. So that's why he's saying Mahatma, Sudhulabha, very rare people. Actually, we cannot appreciate these points so much unless they become more and more saintly internally. So to the degree you are saintly, that much you can appreciate the association of saintly persons. So the degree to which we are fallen in our consciousness, to that degree we will not be able to appreciate the qualities of a pure devotee. Because most people coming, they often ask, what is this? What is so great about chanting Hare Krishna? What is so great about reading scripture? What is so great about being a devotee? Because we just don't understand. Don't throw first the swine. A swine cannot understand the value of Navaratnas. He will think it's like a glass piece. So they can't understand the value of the meaning of a pure devotee. So you should read the 12 chapters, the qualities of pure devotee. Adveshta sarvabhutana maitra karna yevacha nirmamo nirahankara samadukka sukachami. Beginning from that verse. Adveshta, all of the qualities of devotee are explained. A devotee is the best shelter for one in this world. A pure devotee of God is the best shelter. So the shelter of a pure devotee is so nice that it is as good as taking shelter of Krishna's feet. There is no difference only. A pure devotee is the harmless person, that you can lie at his feet peacefully as you lie in the feet of Krishna. There is no fear, no problem, he cannot harm you in any way. This is the meaning of a pure devotee. So he is a Mahatma. It's a Mahatma, Sudurlabha, such a great soul is. Very, very rare. And what are the qualities of such soul? Prabhupada is explaining the purport, you see, in the middle. Third line is in the purport. In the beginning of spiritual realization, while one is trying to give up one's attachment to materialism, there is some leaning towards impersonalism. But when one is further advanced, he can understand that there are activities in the spiritual life, and that these activities constitute devotional service. Realizing this, he becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders to Him. At such a time, one can understand three things. When one becomes a devotee of the Lord, one can understand three things. What are they? Number one, Lord Sri Krishna's mercy is everything. Number two, He is cause of all causes. Number three, His material manifestation is not independent from Him. So these are three things Prabhupada says. One comes to understand when he appreciate this point. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. That means that Krishna's mercy is everything he feels. When one is not a devotee, one feels that everything is happening because of my endeavor. Everyone thinks I am best. I am great. And if I plan out like this and if I execute like this, then everything will go according to my will and wish. This is what everyone thinks in this world. But unfortunately, they never understand there is somebody else also controlling us. Above us. Like for example, you go to a very rich man who is very affluent. If you tell him about God, he says, why should I go to God? I have car, bungalow, everything I need in my life. Why should I go to God? I'm quite happy. But he doesn't understand that the objects or the circumstances which are offering me happiness are under not my control but somebody else's control. Isn't it? See, where is he getting happiness from? Such a person, where is he getting happiness from? Some material things, no, around him. Are they under his control? No. They can be taken away any time. Even his body, even the facilities he has, everything can be taken away any time. So the circumstances as well as the objects we all have in our life are not under our control. So they all are offered to us by Krishna's mercy one life. So really a man with proper understanding appreciates this mind. Everything is Krishna's mercy. Nothing is mine. Even my happiness now I am feeling is Krishna's mercy. It's not in my hands. So, the devotee always understands, I can make plans, I can execute my plans, but ultimately, the result is in Krishna's hands and likeness. I will do my best, and then I will leave it to Krishna. Because Krishna is controlling everything. Everything in the form of Kala. Everything is being controlled. Nobody has anything to say. We can only try to do our best. Like there is a beautiful example in the 7th canto of Prahlad Maharaj giving. He is saying, a child is kept under the custody of father and mother. A tender child, newly born child, he cannot even open his eyes, he cannot even move his hands or legs. He is completely dependent on the mercy of the parents. Father and mother are putting the child on the lap and night out, you know, all night they are watching the child and caring for the child. But sometimes the child passes away and they are not able to give protection. Balasthaneha sharanam pitaram prasimhanam, he said. Balasana is a sharanam, pitaram prasimhanam. Natasya sagadamudanvatamajyatonam. Even a boat, if it is available in an ocean, and you are swimming in the ocean. You may see the boat with your eyes, but that cannot come to your rescue if Lord Narasimha doesn't give his mercy. Sometimes you have an experience of this. Sometimes the train is moving and you want to catch it, but you know that now it's out of my control. Train is gone and you cannot catch it. But sometimes you see that you think it is out, it's gone now, and then train puts a brake now. So then you get into the train. Oh, it's Krishna's mercy today. I don't know, for some reason train stopped. I don't know why. Suffocating in the ocean and you find the boat is passing by, you shout loudly, but that cannot come to save your life if Lord doesn't wish it. That's why he says, Natasyakaradamudallatamatyatavannam. Even sometimes you find a man, wealthy man, surrounded by hundreds and thousands of tablets, in the midst of which he dies pitiably, without being able to save his life. But for Natasyakaradam, although all medicines are available, his medicines could not save his life. But his Lord's mercy is that even with no medicine, sometimes the person becomes all right. His body heals itself sometimes, like that. So the Lord's mercy becomes a very prominent factor in every one of our lives. That's what devotee understands. Lord Sri Krishna's mercy is everything. He understands. That's why the attitude of a devotee is much different from the that I know how everything works. God is like this, nature is like this, and this is the way of liberation, I know everything. And because I have the jnana, I have the strength of this knowledge, I can achieve everything I want. So he thinks he has understood the whole truth, but that is his greatest disease. He doesn't know what is Lord's mercy. How does the devotee pray? Jajanamapaya Tada Krishna Nabhajiya. He says that, my dear Lord, I have never worshipped you. Other devotees worshipping Krishna every moment. Still, how does he feel? My dear Lord, I have not surrendered to you. Please kindly give me your mercy, let me surrender to you. So devotee is always in the mood of surrender and dependence on Krishna. Whereas, jnanis generally think they know everything. They don't understand this mercy factor. Due to which they fall down. That is the reason they fall down. Because all of us, even now, we are chanting 15 rounds, we are able to follow the principles because Krishna is holding us. The shining is visible because Krishna's mercy is holding them. As soon as they begin to think that it is owing to my own qualifications, due to which I am wonderfully doing this thing, at once you find them looking like fool number one. Probably I am pulling the bullet card. He's just going in between the two bulls and thinking I am making the show. Then he decides, when he stands for a while wanting to stop the car, there's a big stick hanging from behind. If that stick hits his back, he will at once roll in the ground like a football. He will die on the spot. So, in the same way, one shouldn't think it is because of my quality that I am doing now. Not that much. So, such a devotee understands Lord Sri Krishna's mercy is everything. He is the cause of all causes. Sarva karana karanam. He understands that Krishna is the cause of all causes. Different people speculate about what is the cause, what is the ultimate cause. Sometimes they say Krishna is the cause. Then they will ask, how did Krishna come? Where did Krishna come from? As if they are very intelligent. Krishna, it is said, the very definition of God is Anadir Adir Govinda. God means one who has no beginning and one who is the beginning of everything. And one who exists beyond the time domain. One who is not subjected to time. In fact, I am factor is one of his energies. Then how can God be subjected to time? It's foolishness of when did Krishna come? As soon as you put the question when you are bringing time factor into picture. And then we are trying to superimpose time on God, which is actually one of his energies. So, Krishna is the cause of all causes. But the foolish people say that everything came from a big bang, or everything came automatically, or everything has been existing throughout. So everyone has his own concocted theory about God. If you go to West, there are so many Western philosophers having so many childish theories. Good to laugh. They have many theories like that. We don't know how others take them seriously. If you want to have a lot of fun, you can read their philosophy. So such philosophies are going on in the name of philosophy, such concoctions of the mind. So a devotee understands sarva karana karana. Krishna is the cause of all causes. And that this material manifestation is not independent from him. So the material world is one of the energies of Krishna, Bahiranga Shakti of Krishna. Antaranga Shakti is his internal potency. His material world is the Bahiranga Shakti. And it is not independent of him. Why this point is put here? There is a class of people called as Karma Mimamsa, philosophers. According to them, this material world was created by God. It is true, certainly, if at all there was a God, according to them. This material world is there. But there are perfect laws in the material world, laws of karma, which are automatically acting in this world. You do good, you will get good results. You do bad, you will get bad results. So it is immaterial whether God exists or not, because he has actually no power to control your life. So simply by doing good, you can achieve good, then why should you worship God? Forget about that. This is bad philosophy. Very dangerous philosophy. This is called karma mimamsa philosophy. Karmana jayate jantuhu karmaneva priyate. So it is said, karmana jayate jantuhu karmaneva priyate. Everything happens according to karma only. So if you do a karma, so they say you work hard like a donkey, and you will get the fruits of that, and you can enjoy life. And if you do bad, you will have to suffer bad reactions. So this appears to be a very attractive philosophy. It is true that according to your good and bad karma, you get the fruits of your actions. But there is one person in control above, who has the ability to alter your karma in the way he wants. Just like a chess player placing his pawn, really there is one person above who is controlling each and every one of us in this world. And he is not bound by any laws of karma. He has a full freedom. He can do whatever he wants. That point has to be understood. So, devotees understand this point that Krishna is above and he can do anything. Although every living entity is acting according to karma, Krishna can interfere in the karma of any living entity. A practical example is Indra. Indra, suppose you get Indra Puja from the Vijabhati. You'll be seeing a beautiful drama now, day after tomorrow. The same drama which I'm telling now. So, Indra was getting Puja every year, there was no problem. And then Krishna observed that Indra is unnecessarily becoming proud, thinking himself to be God. Krishna wanted to take him. So what did he do? He interfered in his regular karma that he was getting. Although nothing was done in his karma, he interfered in his life. And then what did Lord do? He took away the fruits of the yajna, which was meant for Indra. And then taught him a good lesson. So Lord can do that for anybody amongst us. He can do. He can interfere with our karma. For example, if you have done a lot of bad activities in the past, owing to which one has to die in an accident, God can minimize that accident and just make it a small fracture, a tiny finger fracture. On the other hand, if one has done a lot of pious activities, owing to which you have to become rich, then you have to assume a big post, and you have to have a lot of responsibilities, the Lord can completely wipe out all that good karma and not give you the good results which would otherwise damage your spiritual life. Lord can do that. Both ways he can do, good karma and bad karma. He can play with this. He has full ability. That is why he is the supreme authority. Maya adi akshena prakriti, God says. Maya adi akshena means under my supervision the prakriti is acting. Adi akshena means sitting in the top and watching like how things are going. God says under my supervision everything is acting. This is the meaning of maya adi akshena prakriti, sweta saraja. Whole material existence is run by the glance of the Lord. Simply by his glance, he is watching it. So he says, Lord, here he is saying, this material manifestation is not independent from him. Like, there is one Western philosophy, funny philosophy. It says that God created this world, but he created it in such a complicated way that he could not control it. He saw this world, seeing it so complicated, he ran away from that. And now, what can we do? The whole world is suffering with so many problems. And because God also couldn't control, and we are also not able to do anything, we have to live with it. This is the philosophy. The serious philosophy. It is presented in books. And the fellow has written volumes and volumes of books to prove this philosophy. And there are people to read it also. So, Andaya Tande Rupaniya Mana, Sekishatan Sriyam Murugam Dipanda. Blind following the blind. All led to the ditch. This is the condition of modern world today. So, a devotee is not bewildered by such people. He understands this material world is not independent from Krishna. In fact, material is like a chaya, like a shadow. when you move the finger in the shadow of the moon. In the same way, according to Krishna's manifestation, the whole world is acting in whatever way he wants. If you read later, we'll be studying how the Lord is creating the material world and how he is winding up. Everything is explained. Bhutva, bhutva, paliyate. Everything is happening according to the time set by Krishna, whenever he wills. So, Lord's will is the ultimate thing. There is nothing besides that. So, this is the understanding of a pure devotee. What are the three things? Lord Sri Krishna's mercy is everything. He is the cause of all causes. His material manifestation is not independent of him. And then, down below, you see, that he thinks of everything in relation to Vasudeva or Sri Krishna. Such a universal vision of Vasudeva precipitates one's soul surrender to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna as the highest goal. Such surrendered great souls are very rare. So, in this way, a devotee surrenders to Krishna completely when he understands these three things. Actually, it is not just an intellectual adjustment to understand these three things. One has to practically apply it in one's life. Like, for example, if you know that everything is controlled by Krishna, one should feel that Krishna's eyes are open. Krishna's big eyes are watching every one of my moments. It is said in the scripture that Paramatma never winks his eyes. His eyes are always open. We are winking our eyes so many times. Paramatma never winks his eyes. And he is watching you every moment, 24 hours a day. Every nanosecond is, microsecond is watching you. So you cannot escape his vision. So if we have the consciousness, then we cannot indulge in any sinful activities. It's not possible. In the same way, these three principles should be thoroughly understood and applied in everyday life. So understood. So this is the condition of a devotee. Bhagavad Gita Sarvam means for a devotee, Krishna is everything. Krishna is the summum bonum. Krishna is be all and end all for a devotee. Then one can become actual Mahatma. Hare Krishna. Any questions?
Sir,
they both get the same destination, yeah.
Sarijana.
Yeah.
But there's
not
a cycle.
Not a
cycle.
Yes. Father is Krishna's devotee. One is the proper authority coming in parampara. See, as soon as you connect yourself to someone coming in an authorized disciplic succession, that means it is as good as your eyes are open. There is nothing to worry. So you are properly connected. This is the verdict of the Shastra. So you are in knowledge, proper knowledge. Even if you are very young, or even if you grown up and mature in spiritual life, it is not very important. You are properly connected. You are very, very safe. So, Sri Prabhupada gives the example of a raw mango. A raw mango may be there in a tree. It is connected to the tree. It has to only spend some time there, then it becomes ripe over a period of time. So, as long as you are properly connected, there is no problem. Any other questions?
Krishna is also teaching that Kamala Mimamsa philosophy
to his parents. Yeah. Right. Yes, correct, yeah. He is asking, Krishna is also giving this Kamala Mimamsa philosophy that Krishna giving Kamala Mimamsa philosophy. Like Buddha has given Vaishnava for a particular class of people. Similarly, Krishna gave that body, the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, just to distract the Vrajavasis from performing Indra Puja and divert it to perform Govardhan Puja. That was the whole idea. Proper rights that you have to read the purport very carefully. But Krishna is simply speaking atheism here to divert them. Actually, it is not true. And proper gives reasons that you read the Krishna book. Why performing Indra Puja is justified? It's correct. Because that is the first step before one goes to Krishna. According to the Vedic system, one has to worship the demigods like Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu and others. If one doesn't have a solid understanding of the Supreme Truth, Krishna. So what they were doing was all right. But still Krishna wanted to distract them from that kind of puja because he wanted to smash the pride of Indra. Further is all right. Yeah. 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 generally the plan they say, do your best and be ready for the worst. That's what it said. That means you should do your best and be ready to face the worst situation that could arise. But even you ask any manager working in any company, despite all wonderful planning, they have faced failures. Inevitably, consider. In everyone's life, individually, collectively, nationally or internationally, we can see, like in a Challenger rocket. How many scientists worked on that? So many scientists worked on that and they spent so many billions of dollars on that. But then, at last when the rocket was sent, it was burnt to ashes. So many people, scientists died also in that, isn't it? And it is not just done overnight. Very, very carefully planned, and you expect all kinds of problems that could arise. You troubleshoot in advance, So things fail, inevitably. So God's will is ultimate, as I said. So God's will is always there. And we may not be able to understand. That's why a devotee is ready for anything. Devotee is ready to make plans and execute the plans, but he depends on Krishna. Like I didn't speak much on it today. Another time when we go to the verse, another verse we speak more on Krishna's mercy. When Yashodhamaya was binding Krishna, they were 2 inches too short. So half was our endeavor, another half is Lord's mercy. So that mercy is still called as causeless mercy. So it is not that as soon as you do this much quantum of endeavor, the mercy is an obligation from the Lord. It is not an obligation. It is actually still considered causeless. Whether you do endeavor or you don't do endeavor, part of mercy comes from the Lord is still called causeless. The story of the sparrow illustrates that point very nicely. For example, the sparrow was trying to dry up the ocean. Would it ever be able to dry up the ocean? It would never be. But it was still endeavoring. So that endeavor attracted the mercy of Garuda, isn't it? So Garuda came and helped him. But is Garuda obliged to help him just because the sparrow was doing this? He's not obliged. So he did this endeavor and seeing that Garuda can't let me help him. Similarly, in our spiritual life also, we make plans, we execute plans and we endeavor, and then we can attract the attention of the Lord by that. But nobody can say that, okay, now Krishna, I have done my part, now where is your part now? Come on, now you surrender now. You can't say like that. Krishna, that it doesn't work that way. It never works that way. So all these devotees understand, just like the sun rises in the sky at his own will and wish. In the dead of the night, you cannot demand the sun to rise. Nobody has that ability. You cannot challenge. In the same way, Lord will appear at the heart of a devotee at his own will. But a devotee can attract his attention very quickly by surrendering to him more and more. That is why Lord doesn't come under the control of a devotee, but Lord comes under the control of love of the devotee. And that love is actually a small part of the personification of love, Srimati Radharani. So that is what brings Lord under control. So we generally attract the Lord's attention. Just like, for example, you're studying in a school. You cannot challenge the headmaster or principal. Come to my house now. I would like to see you now. So you just, I'll come to my classroom, I want to meet you. The student cannot challenge the headmaster. But if the student studies nicely, gets very good score, he gets university top rank, then the headmaster will come running to his class. He'll come with some gifts and offer some gifts to him and congratulate him, pat him, shake his hands in front of everyone, isn't it? So that means he has attracted the attention of his headmaster. Like that. So you don't have to worry. You just do devotion service very nicely. And Krishna will become attracted. He will come running to you. So this is the way. Because it can be very easily understood. You see, all of us, for example, the practicing spiritual life. If you are put in a particular situation where there is no vegetarian food available, where all people are breaking all regulatory principles, in the Buddhist state, just imagine that is what we are doing now. We are not falling down. What is a tiny, tiny, insignificant speck? So, unfortunately, this pride is something that comes in the heart of anybody very easily. Very easily becomes proud. But it is very difficult to become humble. That is why it is said that it is more easy to, send an elephant into the hole of a needle. But it is very difficult to send a proud man into the kingdom of God. It is more difficult to send a proud man. Very, very difficult. If you go to the, Jerusalem, even today they have a gate. It's called as the Eye of the Needle Gate. They have a gate there. So this gate is very, very short. There when the people go, the camel, no? So you have to get down from the camel, and whatever baggage you kept on the camel, you have to remove it, all of it, and you have to put it all down. And you have to practically kneel down, you know. Kneel down, bow down, fall on the ground, crash. Your entire front portion has to touch the ground. You have to go through that gate and then you can come out. Then your camel also has to go that way. Then leave everything. Similarly, it is said, when one has to enter the kingdom of God, one has to really become humble. One has to give up all material attachments and one has to bow down. That's why it is said, only the humble and meek can enter the kingdom of God. The humble and mercy, they go hand in hand. As soon as one becomes humble, God's mercy is abundantly available. As soon as one becomes proud, one's heart gets dried up. There is no mercy. In fact, one begins to think, I am the doer, I am accomplishing everything. Yedamana madandikaha. Krishna says in the Sindhatana. Yedamana madandikaha. Yedamana madandikaha. Many things he says. One becomes very proud. I accomplished it by my strength. One starts thinking like that. So the devotee understands, everything is achieved by Krishna's mercy.